Welcome, 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 everybody, to the Hockey Think Tank podcast brought to you by the hockeythinktank.com, a website for all hockey players, coaches, and parents to go for a little bit of inspiration and a little bit of education regarding the greatest game on the planet. In today's podcast episode, we speak with one of the top up-and-coming executives in hockey today, and it's Mike McKenzie. Mike grew up in Whitby, Ontario, and even though he grew up near Toronto, he decided to go the NCAA route and attended St. Lawrence University, where he scored over 100 points in his big-time career. From there, he played a few years professionally before taking a job back home as an assistant coach with the Kitchener Rangers of the OHL, and from his hard work, he's worked his way up to being the general manager's position for one of the top franchises in the Ontario Hockey League. Mike's got great perspective on the OHL versus the college route, having done both of them, having attended St. Lawrence as a player and now being an executive and coach in the Ontario Hockey League. So it was great to talk to him about the pros and cons and the differences of each. But before we do get to Mike, let's hop on with my partner, Jeff Lavecchio. Jeff, what's going on in St. Louis today?
Just crushed an 82-ounce steak to get my protein intake up. And we did that podcast, and that guy's a great guy. Very informative. You know, growing up in St. Louis at the time that I did, I literally didn't even know what the OHL was. Never heard of the WHL until probably I got to college hockey. Never heard of the Q. Like in St. Louis, we were pretty sheltered, and, you know, cell phones didn't have internet on them back then. So old balls. I didn't know about any of this stuff. So it was, you know, now I know, but it was cool to kind of ask him those questions that I wish I would have known when I was younger, and cool to hear why he went the college route versus major junior being a Canadian guy. There's a lot of informative stuff for, you know, junior age and kids coming to that age where they kind of got to make a decision. Some of those better guys, you know, do I want to go major junior or do I want to try and play D1? So pretty exciting.
Yeah. And he's just a good dude, right? Like he's just really easy to talk to, really good guy, and has really good perspective being on both sides. But, you know, his hockey career is pretty good too. He scored 114 points playing at St. Lawrence, which is awesome. I remember playing, I played 2 years against him when I was at Cornell, and he was a really good player. So yeah, a lot of really good stuff from Mike, really good guy. And, why don't we just take it over to Mike?
Boom.
All right, here we go. We are really excited to have on this episode of the podcast one of the top up-and-coming hockey guys in the game today. He's fresh off a flight from Eastern Canada where he was watching the under-17s play, Mike McKenzie. Mike, how's it going today?
Good, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yep, thanks. Thanks for coming. And let's take it all the way back to the beginning. You grew up in the hockey hotbed of Whitby, Ontario, home of actually one of the top Cornell alums, Joe Neuendijk. So take us back to. I'm sure you played quite a few games at Iroquois Park Arena. I've seen quite a few games there as well. So what was it like growing up in Whitby?
It was great, actually. It was kind of your typical hometown hockey type of thing where you play on a team in novice and peewee and stuff, and you pretty much play AAA the whole way up with that kind of same group of guys. You know, you interchange a few guys here and there, but it's for the most part all the same guys each year. So you get, you know, to form relationships with those guys. You go to school with a lot of them, and the parents too become pretty close as a parent group. So it's very kind of a smaller, I wouldn't call Whitby a small town now, but a smaller town feel to it than, you know, a league like the GTHL in Toronto where guys are kind of coming from all over the city and all over outside the city. So it was a really good experience for me, and made a lot of good friends growing up in Whitby, and got to play my full minor hockey right from house league when I was 5 years old all the way up to you know, major bantam, they called it at the time, when you're 15 years old and in your OHL draft year. So it was a really good place to play, and good minor hockey system.
Yeah, for sure. And do you think, like, you guys are obviously a little bit east of Toronto, is it a lot different out, you know, in the Whitbys, the Kingstons, around those areas than it is in Toronto growing up? Is it just the culture a lot different?
I think it's a little bit. The GTHL is, you know, always known as one of the better leagues just because of, you know, the amount of kids they draw from in the city and outside the city. So Even now, you'll see a lot of kids coming from, you know, areas like Whitby and going to play in the GTHL. So that's changed a little bit. It was a little bit more rare when I played for guys to kind of take off to the city. There was one or two that did, but now it's becoming a lot more common for kids to do that. So, I think it's a little bit different. You know, it's just a little bit, you know, less, I don't want to say less serious, but a little more laid back, I guess you could say. GTHL is pretty intense, and there's a lot going on. It's fun sometimes going down to those rinks and watching games. You never know what you're going to see when you go down there between the players and the parents and stuff like that. So it's it keeps it entertaining. But I mean, it both, you know, if you're a good player, you know, and you're going to be found, as you guys know. So I think it's both leagues are still good.
Yeah, for sure. Well, that was a very good OHL general manager answer. I'll say it. It's freaking nuts, the GTHL. Yeah. So I
you
hear
can
you,
say
man.
That because we still have to draft these guys and bring them in.
Exactly, so. Exactly. But yeah, just recruiting up there a little bit. Like when I was coaching at Cornell, we'd go up and watch the minor midget games and we'd be like, whoa. Like we thought it was crazy, you know, in the Bostons and the Chicagos and Detroits, and you get up into Toronto, it's a whole different animal. So I get it.
What do you mean by it's crazy? What does that mean? I'm not familiar with the scouting world or any of that stuff. And where is Whitby? I don't know where anything is in Canada. So,
oh my God. So Whitby is what would you say, about an hour east of Toronto, Mike?
Yeah. Like 45, depending on where you're going, I guess. Yeah. 40 to an hour, depending on the traffic. It could be two or three in Toronto, but
that's true.
Yeah. Typically 45 to an hour outside east of Toronto.
Okay. So kind of like a suburb of Toronto ish.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Yeah, and I'll take the crazy answer because I don't know if that's something that you should be answering. But no, it's just a lot more serious, man. Like it's the business of the sport, as you know, down here in the States is crazy. And in Toronto, it's just such a big hockey market, and there's so many kids that are playing. And especially when kids are going into their OHL draft year, it's a big year for them. They all want to do well. The parents all want their kids to do well. They want to get drafted high. And so it can get a little nuts in terms of kids going to certain teams and things like that. So, you know, there's a lot of really good hockey people around that area, good coaches and all that kind of stuff, but it can get a little bit crazy in terms of even like recruiting and things like that. So I don't know if that's, you know, a good answer, but Mike, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I would agree with that. It's, you know, it's just become very serious. I think it's filtered down even from, you know, our level or even the NCAA to, you know, as you guys know now, you know, everyone's so serious about improving and doing better and getting to the next level that, you know, the filter down of hiring coaches and, you know, paying coaches and running, you know, legit actual hockey programs for minor hockey kids. And, you know, whereas when I played, it was just, you know, you showed up to the rink and practiced and you went home and you played games and you didn't really think too much about it. But, you know, there's skills coaches now and there's, you know, different people running different programs and all this stuff. And, you know, all the parents want what's best for their kid. And, you know, some want it sometimes maybe a little too much, and it filters over into that territory maybe of going outside the boundaries of what you should as a parent, I guess. Just a very serious league. And, I mean, it's serious probably because it's one of the best, I'd say, in terms of minor hockey.
Yeah.
The top end talent in the GTHL is about as good as it gets for any minor hockey, I would say, anywhere in the world. So, with that comes the seriousness of that. And, you know, when you have coaches that are, you know, making money and things like that, then they take their job serious, and it just, it all filters down, I think. And, you know, it's not always a negative, but there are times when it can be a little bit of a negative and the parents are a little bit wound up and coaches are a bit wound up and, you know, the referees, and you sometimes forget that there's 15-year-old kids and just young kids playing the game for fun, and it's not the NHL. So I think that's probably the best way to describe it. Great league, but sometimes, you know, minor hockey anywhere, not just there, gets a little bit too serious, I think.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I remember, like, you talk about the top end talent. My first year back coaching at Cornell, we got a tip from an alum to come up and watch a kid on the North York Rangers. So I just happened to be coming up, and they were playing against the Toronto Marlies that year. And, you know, I didn't know hardly anything. I was a couple months into the job, and I remember watching the game, and there was this little kid in it wearing number 97 that was, you know, just kind of skating around the ice, and he was way better than everybody else. And, you know, I'm finally looking at, you know, you have your stat sheet and you're ticking off when they're making good plays and all that kind of stuff. And then all of a sudden I go up to somebody, I go, who the heck is that 97 kid? And they're like, you don't know who Connor McDavid is? And I'm like, no, I never heard of him. They're like, yeah, you'll remember his name. So I was like, I think about that now. Like, I saved the roster, right? I saved the roster because I was like, man, this kid's going to be like the next Crosby. So I still have it today. But
you better have wrote up a good report on him, because if not, that's not good scouting.
Yeah, it was a very good report. But at the end of the report, it was not a chance. He's coming to Cornell. So, No, it's an unbelievable league. But, you know, you parlayed, you know, your youth hockey, played a couple years in the OPJHL, and then went out and got a scholarship to play at St. Lawrence, and decided to go the college route. You know, what was your experience like playing in St. Lawrence? Obviously, you played under Joe Marsh, who's one of the most decorated and hilarious human beings of all time in the college hockey world. So what was your experience like in Canton, New York?
It was awesome. I had a really good time there. Stayed the full 4 years. Met a lot of good friends that I still stay in touch with to this day. We've all been to each other's weddings and get together in the summer. And we had a really big freshman class my first year of 10 or 11 guys. So it was really an easy transition, I think, for all of us, because we all kind of had a whole crew of guys there. As soon as you step foot on campus, you've got, you know, 9 or 10, you know, best buddies right away. And so that was really cool. And then the hockey side of it was great too. We had pretty good teams. We never had the chance to, you know, win a title or anything like that, but we made the ECAC tournament a couple times, fell short. We made the NCAA tournament once or twice, I think. So it was a really good experience. Met a lot of good friends. Got to play at a high level and play against, you know, pretty cool schools when you're going in the Ivy Leagues. I wasn't quite smart enough, and my SATs weren't up to par to like yours were to get into schools like that. But it's really cool going to Cornell or Yale or a Princeton and playing there and seeing the campus. And you know, as a Canadian kid, that's something that's a little bit different to us, is we don't have that, you know, American school spirit vibe here as much as down there. So it was really kind of cool to play in the NCAA and get to experience that and get to experience, you know, a student section and different things like that that maybe you don't experience in other places. So overall, it was a really positive experience on and off the ice.
What years were you there?
I was there from 06 until 2010.
So were Brandon Bolig or Robbie Moss there?
Yes. Yeah, I played with both those guys.
Some St. Louis boys?
They came in after me. Yeah, the St. Louis boys. Robbie Moss, he came in, I think, when I was a junior. Maybe it was his freshman year. And then Bowles, I got to know really well. He was only there for 2 years before he signed and came out of school early. But he was a real good player, a good guy, super tough. Obviously, you can't fight in college, so we never really got to see it. But we kind of always knew, you know, like this guy is pretty big and looks pretty tough. So we always thought he might be pretty tough, and, you know, you know, looking at his NHL career, he proved that to be true. But yep, he could also play too. Like, he was a real good player.
Oh,
I think an undercover good player. Really good shot. So, you know, guys just don't make it to the NHL, especially now, by accident or being just tough. So yeah, it was fun to play with both those guys.
I have another question. I kind of wanted to ask this because it always interests me for why Canadian guys, what their thought process was going the D1 route versus major junior. I mean, all the major junior guys that I played with in the American League, like all they ever talked about was Major Junior. I mean, if you played in the queue, like, all you talk about is a queue. You played in the dub all the time, dub stories. You played in the O all the time, OHS. It's like, so it just seemed to me like all these guys I played with in Providence and Rochester, it's like Major Junior is like the end all be all. You get there, like they, like you almost like made it. And these are the guys who are playing in the AHL talking this way. So what was the reason that you decided to go college as opposed to the Major Junior route?
Yeah, they call it the show HL. That's how good it is. I decided I was a decent player, but I wasn't a high end player. Especially when I was younger, I was a bit of a late bloomer. So I was a seventh round pick, middle of the road pick. And I kind of realized and knew I needed more time to develop. So I played junior A hockey and figured if I can play, you know, 3 or 4 years of junior A hockey and get stronger and bigger and faster, then I'd give myself probably a better chance to prolong my career by playing those 3 or 4 years at junior and then going to the NCAA, playing another 4 years there, and then, you know, being 23, 24 by the time I'm done, instead of going to the OHL and possibly flaming out when I'm, you know, 18 or 19. And then, you know, that would be the kind of the pinnacle of my, you know, hockey career at that point and the highest level I would make it to. So I think it was a really good decision for me personally, but I mean, everyone's different, and that's what we always tell players and parents when we talk to them, and they have different options, especially for American kids or kids that are pretty bright and have school options, that, you know, it's a decision that's very personal to everyone, and everyone's different and they're at different stages in their growth and development. So I don't think there's any like right answer, but the CHL is very good hockey. And I think, you know, after playing in college and now being involved in the OHL and the CHL, I definitely do believe that like the best route for a kid that's a top end player is probably coming to the CHL, just because it's going to fast track your career. But you know, on the flip side, if you're not ready for that level, then it might also, you know, be the, you know, the best you ever get when you're 17 or 18 and then it's over. So for guys that are high end though, playing against the best players right off the hop and not having to wait those 2 years or sometimes 3 years to go play in the NCAA is a huge bonus. And now you know, you're seeing more and more guys come into the NHL when they're like 18 or 19. So they're starting to make money when they're 18, 19, 20 years old. So we live in 2018 where everyone wants to move up as quick as they can and find that secret hack or secret way to, you know, move up quicker. That's what everyone wants to do. And I think if you're good enough, then coming into the CHL is probably the quickest way to get to pro hockey and make it to the NHL. But again, it's not for everyone. It's a kind of a personal choice, I'd say.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I'm sure you get that question all the time, especially, you know, having a lot of experience in both ways. And, you know, people are stubborn whenever people talk about the OHL versus the NCAA route. You know, I was obviously an NCAA coach, and if you talk to NCAA coaches, you know, they're diehard NCAA. And nobody should be going to play Major Junior. And then you talk to people up in Canada sometimes, and it's like, nobody should be going down to play NCAA, blah, blah, blah. Do you find that a lot of the stubbornness and people just having one opinion and not being really open to one way or the other? Or do you feel like, you know, there's a lot of people that, you know, like to do their research and make a fair decision, if that makes any sense?
Well, I totally feel like most people are stubborn. And I mean, it makes sense though, because everyone has biases, and your bias is going to be, you know, what you know the best and understand the most, and what you've experienced personally yourself. So if you're someone that grew up and watched the OHL growing up when you're younger, because you're an Ontario kid, then you're going to naturally gravitate towards that. And vice versa, if you're a kid that grows up in the U.S. and you watch NCAA football and hockey, then that's likely to be kind of your number one thing that you're working towards. So, you know, and if you play in the OHL or you play in the NCAA, then it's, you know, it's obvious you're going to have those biases or that kind of pride, I guess, for your league or where you played or where you coached even or whatever, yeah. Even for like staff members and stuff. So that's why I feel fortunate that I've been able to do both, because there's not a lot of people that can say that they've been on both sides of it. And it gives you a more like balanced view of what each one's about. And it allows you to sit on the fence, which is always good. I like sitting on the fence. Not a lot of people do. They want to just, you know, go hard left or hard right and not really, give their opinion and just it to be black and white. And I think there's a lot of times where the gray area is sometimes a better spot to be. And that's kind of where I stand on that. I've played in the NCAA, but, you know, I've worked in the OHL. I see the positives and negatives of both to certain individuals. So, but there is a lot of misinformation out there, I think. And I think, you know, both sides can probably do a better job of understanding what, you know, actually the other one's about and being a little more informed on, you know, what it's all about.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we dealt with that in recruiting at the college level too, because you're trying to recruit against other schools and stuff. And we would encourage kids like, hey, like it's a good thing to go on other visits and it's a good thing to get experiences and talk to other coaches and stuff like that. Because then if you do want to come here, you know what you're getting and you know what else is out there. And is that something that you know, being an OHL general manager now, like, is that something that you talk to people about? Is that, do you also talk to people about the NCAA route? How would you find that?
Yeah, I think you need to face it head on. Like yeah. You said, like, I think there's no reason to just sit and, you know, I think the best recruiting strategy is probably talking about the positives of what you're going to bring when the player comes to you, whether that's, you know, at school or in the CHL. And I think sometimes people get a little carried away with, you know, they want to find the negatives with other schools or sure. Other routes. And I think that's probably a really weak way to approach it. Because if you're only talking about the negatives of someone else's program or league, then, you know, you obviously aren't confident in the positives of what you can offer, your league and your organization can offer. So that's something we try to do. There's no bashing or there's no need to bash or bad mouth or whatever. I think we just, you know, lay all the cards on the table and this is what we have to offer. And, you know, everyone's got the right to look at both sides of it and see what the other side has to offer. And at the end of the day, the player and his parents and representatives will make the best decision for the player and the kid. But, I think that's the best way to go about it.
Yeah, no, I think that's awesome. And, you know, one of the biggest things that we want to do with the podcast and the company that we built with the Hockey Think Tank is just provide as much information and education to people as we can. So, you know, having the college ties that we have, we've had quite a few college people and we'll have probably a lot more college people on here than major junior people. So, you know, you talk about the positives of playing major junior in the Ontario Hockey League, you know, there probably will be a lot of people listening that don't know much about it. So if you can, I'd love for you to just for maybe a minute or two, just kind of give what the positives of the Ontario Hockey League is and what your experience has been like, you know, coaching and being an executive in that league.
Yeah. Well, I think the biggest thing, like I said earlier, is it's the best competition you're going to get at the age of 16 through 20. And you know, the problem with everyone wants to compare the two leagues, and it's tough because it's almost comparing apples to oranges, because there's no 16-year-olds or 17-year-olds that are going to play NCAA hockey.
Yep.
So, you know, you're comparing a different set of time. Really, you're comparing a 16 to 19 to 19 or 20-ish, you know, window for a player. And you're also comparing at the NCAA level, you're comparing 18 at the lowest end, maybe most times 19 for most kids, to 24 years old. So it's apples to oranges, really. But I think the positives with the OHL and the CHL are it's basically as close to professional hockey as you're going to get, and prepare you the best for professional hockey And that goes everything from the competition and level of play, the people that you're going to play against on a daily basis in practice, but also face off against in games too. And the amount of first round, second round NHL picks throughout, you know, the OHL is extremely high. And guys are coming right from our league when they're 18 and 19 and jumping right into the NHL. So, you know, for us, you know, we play London on last Sunday. And, you know, it's Evan Bouchard and Alex Fermentin's first game back.
Oh, that's nice that you guys got them there.
Yeah, that always seems to happen to us for some reason. But that's great for our guys and great for our league. You know, to be able to, you're going onto the ice against a guy that was playing for the Edmonton Oilers three nights ago, or a guy that was playing for the Ottawa Senators, you know, four nights ago. Like, it doesn't get much better than that in terms of the level of play you're going to get outside the NHL at a junior hockey age. So, you know, on the 68-game schedule, you know, the travel and stuff like that, again, it's closer to the pro hockey schedule of playing more games and not just playing a typical kind of Friday, Saturday college type schedule where you're 40 games in a good year. So I think those are probably the biggest things, just the overall level of competition, not having to wait those 2 years or 3 years sometimes to reach that, you know, height of competition. And then just how similar it is to professional hockey and the way the leagues run. I think those are probably the biggest positives, I would say.
Cool.
I always wondered this. So I'm an 85 birth year, so old balls, loose skin. I growing up never knew anything about major junior. I said I wanted to play college hockey, but back then in St. Louis, there was probably like one guy playing D1. So I didn't know what that meant. I didn't know anything about leagues. It's obviously way better here in St. Louis now with social media and TV and cable, whatever, all that stuff. So kids know, but still, I'm sure a lot of kids don't know what like the schooling packages are. Like if you go, say they go and play in the OHL and they don't sign an NHL deal, like what, I'm pretty sure there's school packages, right? Like if you don't sign an NHL deal after, isn't it like so many years in the OHL or so many games, you can get some CIS school paid for, or is that a thing? Am I just making that up?
No, you're good. Yeah. You've done your research. That's like we have education packages. So, we could spend a whole other hour and whole other podcast probably breaking all the kind of details of an education package and how they work. It's pretty complex, but the base premise of it is that, you know, each one's going to look different. Like it's a negotiated thing, but you know, most guys on our team, you know, once they step on the ice for an exhibition game and their NCAA eligibility goes out the window, they'll have agreed to an education package and signed a contract with that in it that gives them so much money for school to put towards their schooling once they're done playing in the league. So not to be used while they're playing in the league. But while they are playing in the league, we also cover the cost of any courses they do want to take while they're playing. And that doesn't dip into that education package. That just kind of goes off to the side and sits there and waits until you're done. And then the only way to lose that package or lose that education money would be to sign an NHL contract. You know, at that point, you know, you have enough money probably to get your education if you want down the road with your signing bonus and all that stuff. Or if you play professional hockey, so, you know, any league in Europe, East Coast League, American League, any non NHL professional league, if you play pro hockey for more than 18 months. So that gives you about a year and a half to kind of test the waters. You know, if you're a guy that wants to go and play in the East Coast League and grind it out, then you can do that for a year. And maybe at the end of the year, you look at it and say, I'm not really a huge fan of this. You know, I'm just going to go get my education, go back and go to school somewhere. Then you can still access that. You know, once you've played after 18 months, then it's gone, but it gives you at least a little bit of time to test the waters a little bit and see if there's, you know, see if pro hockey's for you or if there's an opportunity to move up or whatever. So it's actually a really good program. I think it's extremely underrated, and I think that's one of the number one things that's a little bit misinformed about our league is, you know, saying, you know, the common line would be, you're going to the OHL, they don't care about education or you know, you're giving up a scholarship to go for, you know, play in the OHL for nothing and you're going to lose all your education money. And our packages are actually quite good. They weren't as good when I was, you know, going through the process, but the league's done a really good job of enhancing them and making the benefits even better for kids now. So, you know, lots of kids use those and then go off and play, you know, another 4 or 5 more years at, you know, CIS schools or wherever they want pretty much. So it's actually a really good program. I think that's probably the number one kind of misinformation that you get about the CHL is that, you know, there's no education money or there's no education packages or they're not that good. I would disagree with that for sure.
Gotcha. Well, cool. Well, I think that's a lot of really good information there because there are a lot of people that just don't know and might hear some of that information. It's good to get it from directly, you know, a GM in the OHL. I think you would know what you're talking about. So
I pretend to, at least.
Yeah, but I just kind of want to go back to your journey here now too. You know, you played a couple of years of pro hockey in the AHL and the East Coast League, and then you got right into coaching as an assistant coach with the Kitchener Rangers, and you've worked your way up from an assistant coach all the way to assistant GM to now the general manager. Talk to me a little bit about that process and maybe some of the things that you learned along the way, because, you know, I think working your way up from the bottom is the way to go. I mean, I think you learned so much from having to do all those responsibilities and doing some of the grunt work, and now you're, you know, probably delegating people some of the grunt work that you did when you were an assistant coach. So talk to us a little bit about your time with Kitchener and working your way up to the general manager's role.
Yeah, I couldn't have said it better myself. I totally agree with what you said about, you know, kind of working your way up, and I was really, really, really fortunate to be hired by Kitchener. I was looking to kind of catch on anywhere. I was willing to kind of move anywhere or catch on with any OHL team, and really fortunate to be hired by Kitchener, one of the kind of model franchises, you know, not just in the OHL, but the CHL, and was hired by Steve Spott, who's now with the San Jose Sharks as an assistant coach, with Pete DeBoer, who was also head coach and GM of the Rangers before Steve was. So
A couple pretty good guys to learn from.
yeah, not bad. They've had some success. So I was really, really fortunate to work a year with Steve. You know, he taught me a lot, you know, as a coach, but also I was doing other stuff too, you know, back to the point you made, but I was kind of doing a little bit of everything, which I think was really valuable to me, just to learn as much stuff as I could. You know, it wasn't always fun stuff, you know, booking buses and booking meals and hotel rooms and stuff like that isn't always fun, but someone has to do it. And, you know, it was good to learn all those things, you know, running the billet program and taking care of billet families and things like that. You know, so there was lots of stuff there that I learned, especially my first year. And then, you know, there was a lot of turnover in the next couple of years with different guys coming and going, and assistant coaches and a new head coach and Troy Smith. And he taught me a lot as well, you know, how to run things and operate things, especially off the ice. And then, you know, I just kind of slowly started transitioning into doing a little bit more scouting and, you know, kind of hanging around the management crew and seeing, you know, how trades work and different stuff like that. And I always thought, you know, when I started out and got hired, that I definitely wanted to be a coach. Like, I knew I wanted to be a coach. I wanted to coach. That was it. And then once I started coaching more and doing more, you know, kind of dipping my toe into the management side, I really started liking the management stuff even more, and decided, you know, at some point, if the opportunity ever arose, I would love to kind of move to that side of it a bit more full time than coaching even. I still enjoy coaching and liked it, but I just, management was more of a passion, and the scouting and things like that. So kind of transitioned and had like a bit of a 2-year transition to assistant GM and assistant coach, where I was kind of doing both, which was awesome because I could still go on the bench, but I could also go out and scout, and I could do basically like a little bit of everything from the coaching side and a little bit of everything from the management side. So, and then, you know, obviously getting fortunate to become the GM, you know, was very, cool as well. But like, I've been there for 7 years now, and the amount I've learned in, you know, those 7 years is just, you know, off the charts. Like you look back and you come in as someone that, you know, knows nothing about, like we all play and you think you know about hockey and how things work, and then you become a coach or management and you're like, holy crap, I have no idea like what goes on behind the scenes. I have no clue, you know, how hard the guys work on systems and, you know, argue over this, argue over that, you know, lineup decision, like everything you never think of as a player goes on behind the scenes. It's really eye opening when you get back there and see how things are run. Probably wish I knew all that when I was playing, because when you think like a coach, you can probably, you know, be on the coach's better side most times. But like when you're playing, you just don't think that way, right? You're in the battle and you're a player, and you don't really, you've got that tunnel vision of being a player. So, but no, it's been unreal experience in Kitchener for all 7 years, and learned from a lot of good people along the way.
So we have a lot of, you know, we just started doing this. I think we've only put out 3 or 4 podcasts, you know, on the line so far.
on Exchangeagram.
On Exchangeagram, on the line. Yes, glad you caught that reference. Nice. I've already had, you know, I know tons of the guys that I train, pro, college, junior, midgets, and younger, listen to this. And I'm trying to give them as much information from high-level people like yourselves as possible. And since you've been on both sides, player, coach, you know, executive, what kind of thing would you say to a player to give them advice now that you know how coaches are thinking, how GMs are thinking, how the front office is thinking? Like if a coach is coming down on a guy, you know, just for whatever reason, like poor play and the kid thinks, oh, everybody hates me. Like if you had, you know, some kind of advice to kind of get his spirits up, do you know what I mean? Like what would you give him advice for?
Yeah. I think the biggest thing is, something we try to preach with our guys, and it's extremely hard because everyone wants to do well and everyone wants to succeed. And I'm sure it's the same way with the guys you train and work with. Like you want them to succeed and do well, and they want to succeed and do well, and their parents do. And, but you know, like it's not always going to be good. There's going to be times when you fail, and there's going to be times when you know, things aren't going well. And I think that's important for kids, especially hockey players, to realize, and you guys played, you know, there's shifts where you go out there and you have a good shift. There's shifts when you go out and you skate around for 45 seconds and do nothing. And there's other shifts where they're a disaster and you turn the puck over twice and you get scored on or whatever. But there's probably a lot more failure in the game of hockey than there is successes, unless you're like a top end player. You know, Connor McDavid is coming out of games most nights with a successful night, and usually a couple points. But I think those guys are more anomalies, and you know, the other 95% of guys are grinding it out, and you know, it's hard. It's a hard game. It's a game full of little failures, I think. So it's something that we try to preach with our guys, is that you can't fear failure. And you, I saw a good quote from the head coach of the LA Rams, Sean McVay, and his line was, "We don't fear failure here. We attack success." And I think that's something we're trying to really focus on with our young guys, is that, you know, you can't be scared to make a play. You can't be scared to make a mistake. Everyone's going to make mistakes. Everyone's going to fail at some point, whether they're little ones like turning a puck over, or they're big ones like, you know, giving up the game-winning goal or whatever in overtime. But everyone's going to go through it at some point. But it's how you bounce back and how you get around those failures and roadblocks and speed bumps more so. It's really easy when you're winning and scoring and stuff to play well, but you know, it's not as easy when things aren't going your way. So, and that's most of the time in hockey, I think. So I think that's probably the biggest message for sure.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's great. We certainly preach that a lot. And you talk to even the pro players that we've had on the podcast and stuff like that, like in the high level coaches, like they've all failed a lot, a lot. And we can agree with you more. And, you know, successful people fail a lot more than failures do. So I'm glad that you said that, and we totally 100% agree. And you know, from a success standpoint though, you know, you last year was your first year as the head general manager with Kitchener, correct?
Yes.
So, and you guys made it all the way to the Western Conference Finals, lost in a heartbreaker to Sault Ste. Marie in Game 7. You know, what's something, you guys had a great year. What's a big thing that you took out of such a successful year? Was it something about that team's culture? Was it certain leaders? Was it the coach? I mean, why were you guys so successful that year?
I think the biggest thing, like, a hockey season is such a short period of time, but when you look back on it, it's also such a long period of time. Like when you're in the season and you're kind of working day to day. I think last year we did a really good job, and I'll give our coaches credit for this, is that we didn't get too high, but we also didn't get too low. And we kept a very even keel throughout the season. And I think that's hard to do sometimes. Like, you know, you win a big game or you're on a 3 or 4 game winning streak, and the natural human reaction is to become arrogant and cocky and think you don't have to work as hard and things like that. And on the flip side of that, you know, you lose 2 or 3 in a row, or you're in a scoring drought and you can't score, or your goalie's, you know, not making any saves for you and he's losing you games or whatever. It's very easy to also become really negative too, and panic and start doing things that are kind of out of, you know, or worrying about things that are out of your control and doing things that are uncharacteristic. So I guess the best way to describe it, I think our organization team, and especially coaches, did a really good job of like playing the long game and not worrying too much about, you know, that specific day or that specific game, and having a bigger picture in mind, and kind of, you know, it's very cliche to say, but sticking to the process, that's a big kind of phrase now, I know, but you know, having the mindset of sticking to the process, that we're working towards something bigger in the end, and that all these little results will affect that, but we can't get too hung up on you know, too much of them in a negative or positive fashion.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. That's great advice for sure. And they are long seasons, you know. And it's an emotional game, right? It's an emotional game, and it's pretty easy to get really high and really low. So the fact that your coaching staff and the players were able to do that, I think that's a huge, huge benefit. And you know, a couple other things we wanted to ask you, Mike. And I'm sure you get this question all the time, but you come from obviously a huge hockey family background, your dad being Bob McKenzie, who I'm sure 99% of the people who will listen to this podcast, aside from my mom and Jeff's mom, who might be the only people listening to the podcast, but they know who he is. What was it like growing up with Bob as your dad? And it must have been pretty cool getting in on some NHL games. And just what was it like with Bob as your dad?
Oh, it was awesome. It was it allowed me, you know, kind of shaped, I guess, who, not the person I am, but the hockey person, I guess you could say I am, because he let me tag along with him to a million different events. And I think I went to like 9 World Juniors, 4 or 5 Memorial Cups, 4 or 5 Stanley Cup final games. So I was lucky that he let me tag along for that stuff. And I got to see right from when I was young, kind of, you know, how the game works and a little bit more behind the scenes than someone else usually would, and got to meet people and, you know, stuff like that. And So I was really fortunate that he allowed me kind of that opportunity, and it really helped kind of shape the way I look at the game and you know, the people I know now and stuff like that too. So it was awesome. Obviously you get the odd, not the odd, a lot of chirps on the ice, things like that about, you know, who he is and stuff, but that came at a young age. So by the time I got older, I'd heard everything, and it's just, you know, it wasn't a big deal, but,
try being 5 foot four
territory.
Try being 5 foot
yeah,
four.
Sure
you get chirped quite
sure,
a bit.
I'm sure you've heard a few short jokes in your day, but same goes for this. I'm sure you hear it when you're younger, and then it's, as you get older, it's, yeah. Okay. I've heard that one before, and it's not a big deal at the end of the day. So the positives, definitely outweighed any kind of negative, for sure.
Yeah. I always felt like when I was getting chirped for being short, like I just wanted it to be original. Like you even mentioned it, like you hear the same things over and over. Like if anybody ever said something that made me laugh, that was like good, I'd appreciate that. So there was this one time we're playing in Des Moines. I was in the USHL and I was at the end of the bench, and the benches are right next to each other. And the goalie who wasn't playing kind of looks over him. He goes, "Hey Scott." And I was like, "Yeah." He goes, "My sister's got a birthday party this weekend. She's 13 years old. Do you mind if I rent you as a circus midget to come over and be a part of the party?" And I was like, I actually laughed. I was like, that's actually pretty good. Like, I appreciate that. Good work. So
yes, you got on
yeah,
top.
Yeah.
You know, so
yeah, you want them to be like, actually take some time and like come up with something like half decent or something new. Like it gets old, the same things over and over again. Have a little creativity if you're gonna mock me.
Exactly. Well, you talk about, you know, being able to be in some cool places, and you know, are there any stories that you have just maybe sometimes being starstruck by somebody that you got to meet, or maybe there was a guy that went out of his way to be really cool to you, or somebody did something that's really funny in your times that you got to be able to kind of hang around with your dad?
You said starstruck. This is probably the opposite of starstruck, but it's actually a pretty funny story. I was in, I think it was in the early 90s, when Boston was playing the Oilers in the Stanley Cup final. My dad took me with him to Boston, and I would have been only, I guess, four or five, 6 years old at the time. So, we were in the lobby of the hotel, and my dad was talking to a guy, and obviously I didn't know who it was because I was just a little kid, and I really wanted to go to the rink. We were going to go to the Bruins pregame skate and watch the morning skate, and the day before, a player on the Bruins named Greg Haugood, he gave me his stick after the skate. So being like a younger kid at the time, like, he's your hero, you know, right away. And, you know, he's like my new favorite player at that time, obviously. And I really, really wanted to go see Greg Haugood at the rink and, watch him practice and stuff. So I'm tugging on my dad's arm. "Can we please go to the rink, Dad?" And he's like, "Yeah, just give me 1 second, Mike. I'm just talking to someone here." So I walk away for a minute, come back, "Dad, we really need to go to the rink. Please, can we go to the rink? I want to watch Greg Haugood practice." He's like, "Mike, give me a few seconds here. I'm just talking to someone really important." And I come back again the third time, and I do it again and say, "Dad, I really want to go to the rink. Can we please go now?" And the man he's talking to looks at me and says, "Well, you really want to go to the rink, do you?" And I said, "Yeah, I want to see Greg Haugood." And my dad goes, "Mike, this is a man named Gordie Howe. He's one of the greatest hockey players that's ever played the game." And I looked at Gordie Howe and said, "Yeah, but I want to see some real hockey players. Can we go to the rink now?" So that's a bit of a embarrassing moment, making fun of Gordie Howe, not calling him a real hockey player when I was 4 or 5 years old.
Oh, so I love it.
Kind of the opposite of being starstruck, but still a funny story to look back on now.
That's so funny. And the last thing I wanted to ask you, Mike, is, you know, Joe Marsh is, I've gotten to meet him a couple times, and I probably laughed the entire time that I was talking to him. You know, do you have any good Joe Marsh stories that people would appreciate as well?
Yeah, there's lots. He was good. He had some really good, like, pregame and intermission speeches. he's a really good motivator, and you know, he's one of those guys that would start slow and kind of work his way into it, and then by the end of it, he'd kind of like fire himself up so much, sometimes a little too much, and something might get broken or spilt or whatever. But there's lots of kind of funny memories. The one that stands out to me probably is when he used to drive like a really old minivan around town to the rink, like really old beat up minivan. And I guess after the game, one night we lost and he was pissed off, and he went out to his car and he slammed the door like over and over again, the driver's side door. And I guess like he slammed it so hard and so many times it wouldn't shut. So eventually it wouldn't shut. So he just took a bungee cord and then like just like bungee corded the door. So like the spring was broken. So like if he was going around a corner, it would just like if he didn't have the bungee cord on it, it would just, the door would just swing wide open while he was driving. So he had a bungee cord attached to the door and he would just hold it while he drove. But like, you know, when you're driving, you can't just hold it firm the whole time. So he'd be driving around town and we'd see him, you know, pulling up to the rink and his door would be like half open and like hanging off a bungee cord. So, and I guess in the summer when we left, some of the guys that stuck around said that he just took the door right off and was just like driving around town and town without any front door in his van. He didn't get it fixed for like a whole year. So I don't know why that's probably the funniest story that sticks out to me.
That's unreal. It's always fun when those coaches like kind of lose their mind. And sometimes when they lose their mind as a player, you have to like not laugh because sometimes they go overboard. I'm sure you experienced that as an assistant coach. There were times where the head coach was just going off and then he'd say something just really off color and you got to like not laugh because that would be bad. But I remember one time I was playing junior hockey and our coach, like his thing was breaking sticks. So like whenever you get really pissed off, he would just come in and, you know, he'd ask for somebody's stick and then he'd whack it against the wall and break the stick. Well, one time he comes in and we're losing or whatever. And he goes, all right, you give me your stick. And so he takes the stick and he whacks it against the wall and it doesn't break. And so like, he just gets even more mad. And then he whacks it against the wall again and it doesn't break. And then there's a whiteboard. Then he comes over, he whacks the whiteboard and it still doesn't break. So he's getting just like even more mad, right? So like, he was at like a 9 out of 10. Now he's at like a 11 out of 10 and just how pissed he is. So then he starts getting, he takes the stick and he starts trying to jump up and like break it from jumping up and then like slamming his foot down on it. And so he does that like 3 or 4 times. And then the last time he does it, the stick doesn't break, but he like falls and he falls on his back and hits his head on the ground. So like the stick didn't break, he falls. So then he gets up and like, he must have like came to and became conscious again, but it was one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my entire life. But we're all sitting there, as I'm sure you know, we're just like trying so hard not to laugh because he's so mad at us and we don't want to get him even more pissed, but it's like one of the funniest things you've ever seen. So
yeah, I feel like they could run, like if they had like hidden cameras in dressing rooms, they could run like a full like few hours of just like coach bloopers of times they've like been so mad that they've like done something stupid and it's like backfired, like you smash something and it comes back and hits them, or
totally
try to throw something and it doesn't break like you were talking about. But I knew one guy that he was smart, I won't name names, that I worked with, but he used to get the trainer to like pre-cut a stick if he knew he was gonna like snap on the team. And he'd like pre-cut it like halfway cut, so like when he went in there he knew which one it was. He would just have it placed there, so when he went in there he would like grab the right one, and then when he like went to snap it, it would just like crumble, so he didn't have to worry about not breaking it like the guy you were talking about. So that, I thought that was pretty smart.
Yeah, I didn't want to name any names either, but the funny thing is the guy who did it actually is a Stanley Cup champion now, so he's got a bit of a temper, but he knows what he's doing, so
worked out for him.
Yeah, exactly. But well, Mike, this was awesome, man. Really appreciate you taking the time to come on the podcast and share your experience, and I think people will get a lot out of, you know, just hearing what some of the differences between the OHL and college hockey is too. So can't thank you enough for taking the time to come on here, and we wish you luck for this season in Kitchener, and can't wait to see how you guys do.
Yeah, no problem, guys. Anytime. Thanks for having me, and good luck with everything.
All right, awesome. Have a good one.
Mm-hmm.